Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Foo followers everywhere around the world. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. That is me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Speaking to you from London here in the UK. This is episode 75 of the podcast, season 6. And we had a little break there, you may have noticed. The previous episode with Brad Martin went out in July, end of July, and we are now on the 1st of November 2021. Thank you so much for your patience. It was originally just a summer break, but it did extend a little bit longer. But listen, it's great to be back. I've been recording quite a few conversations over the last few weeks, and the plan is to just release those over the coming weeks and months as we lead up to, of course, our annual end of year show featuring your friend of mine, Mike Fury. Discussions have taken place, I can confirm. A list has already been made up of a lot of the big fight films that have been released so far this year. So prep is underway for our end of year show. It's always tricky to whittle that list down to our personal top fives of the year. And particularly this year, it's been a very strong year for martial arts movies. So that is in the pipeline, you'll be pleased to know. On to today's episode. And today we have a double header for you, featuring not one but two great conversations, all about the release of a new Scott Adkins movie. The film is called One Shot. One Shot is released in cinemas and on demand in the USA this Friday. That's the 5th of November, courtesy of Screen Media Films. One Shot stars Scott Adkins, Ryan Phillippe and Ashley Green Corey. I was sent a screener of this movie a good couple of weeks back and I was really taken with it. It's a very impressive indie action movie that plays out in real time in one continuous take. As soon as I saw this movie, I immediately wanted to know how on earth this got made. I'm always fascinated by the technical aspects, particularly with one-shot films. So it's a very incredible achievement, particularly considering the budget limitations and obviously the limited time that they had to shoot this movie. So the film is set on an island prison and it follows an elite team of Navy SEALs led by friend of the show, Scott Adkins. And they are there to help extract one of the detainees on the island until insurgents break through, led by the MMA fighter Jess Liodin, and they invade the island, and of course carnage ensues. It's not a kung fu movie by any stretch of the imagination, so the name of this podcast doesn't necessarily apply to One Shot. One Shot is more of a military action movie, I would say. There's lots of gunfights and explosions, but of course it is still a Scott Adkins movie, so it does break occasionally for the odd fist fight, one of which is with the martial artist, stunt performer and actor Lee Charles. You will hear from Lee a little bit later on today's show, talking about his experiences making One Shot, but also his incredible journey in action movies, which has seen him work with Scott Adkins on films including Green Street 3, Eliminators, Accident Man and Avengement. Lee has also trained extensively with Benny the Jet Aquidez, who has also appeared on this podcast. Lee has fought on screen with the likes of Dave Bautista in Final Score, and he had that wonderfully violent fight scene with Chope Dirasu in Gangs of London, co-created by the Raid director Gareth Evans, of course. Lee played Len the Butcher. I think anyone who watched Gangs of London will know of Lee's character is certainly a very memorable sequence, to say the least. But before I throw over to my conversation with Lee, I also had a chat with the director of One Shot, James Nunn. Regular listeners of this show might recall that I first had a chat with James back in 2017 on episode 14 of this podcast. I'll be sure to put a link to that episode in the podcast description for this show. One Shot sees James reunite with Scott Adkins. The two worked together on 2013's Green Street 3 and also 2016's Eliminators. James is immensely proud of One Shot and he has every right to be. It really is an amazing achievement. For listeners here in the UK, the release details of One Shot are still under wraps as I'm talking to you now. But as soon as we do find out, we will, of course, be posting that information all over our social media channels. So you can keep up to date with all the latest martial arts movie news, reviews and information about this podcast by following the Kung Fu Movie Guide on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. We are also on Instagram and Facebook at Kung Fu Movie Guide. Okay, that is all from me for the moment. I will be back shortly to introduce my chat with Lee Charles, but before that, let's catch up now with the director of One Shot, James Nunn. You will hear my chat with James after this short clip from the trailer of One Shot.
And sir arrived 10 days ago.
We the only ones out here?
Just us and our guests.
In Europe has been trying to build a dirty bomb. We traced it to DC.
The detainees that come here do not depart until we've properly vetted.
Are you a mean man, sir?
I've made a terrible mistake.
We screw up and one of these guys hurts the homeland, it's all over CNN.
Something's not right. On me.
So let's bring people up to speed with One Shot, so your new movie. When did you think about doing this idea, this concept, this crazy idea?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me back, Ben. Big fan as always, and really enjoyed the last conversation we had. We may have even talked about it. I may have talked about it with you as my like top secret Scott project.
Yes.
I actually came up with it. The idea for it, when we wrapped Eliminators and we were at the pub.
Where all the best ideas happen.
And I pitched this idea to the producers and just said, look, I want to capitalize on my abilities as a very technical director, Scott's abilities as the greatest on-screen fighter, and find a project that showcases both of those elements. Mm-hmm. They went, well, what is that project? What does that look like? And I said, well, you know, from doing Eliminators, there's the cable car fight, which is, I think, probably about 90 seconds long. And yeah. I was like, why don't you just do an entire movie in one shot where Scott is just kicking the hell out of everyone? We watch him get physically drained, physically tired. And they went, okay, so you're talking about like a martial arts movie in one shot? I'm like, yep. Yeah, and then they're like, that's brilliant. Impossible, but brilliant. I go, yeah. Okay. And they go, well, come write it. And so I wrote this idea for a very comic booky sort of martial arts one-shot movie on a prison island where this elite team of SEALs go in, but they lose their weapons immediately. And it was kind of like inside a prison. It was way more comic booky. It had like, it was still a prison island, but it was like cannibal field. And they were like, the prisoners had killed all the guards and they were just dominating this island. And that's what I came up with. And everyone, they loved it. And Scott loved it and wanted to do it and was really into it. And I sort of sold it to a company and they tried to make it work with certain actors, always for Scott as the lead.
Yeah.
But tried to make it work with like, equal kind of pairing of villain level wise, and we just could never like. There was one particular action star who was keen on it, but just didn't want to do the one shot conceit. Like, was like, just make this a normal movie. And I didn't want to do that. So they fell away. And then when they fell away, the movie ended up just getting locked at this particular company that owned the rights. And they said, no one wants to do it. Like, we can't make it work with the finance that we need and stuff. So I just had to kind of forget about it. And then in that interim, Birdman come out was phenomenal success. Yeah. 1917 come out was phenomenal success. When 1917 came out, the name of the lead actor was Blake, whatever. And the name of Scott's character in my one shot was always Blake Harris.
How funny.
And I was like, oh my God, like even the lead's called the effing same name. So I changed that to take Harris for one shot.
1917 is a wonderful film and a great one take film example. But did your heart sink a little bit when it came out? Did you think, oh shit, that was our idea?
It did. Yes and no, because the idea wasn't the same. You know, they're much bigger production value, much bigger scope, a lot of wides. Whereas I was very intent on making mine sort of very intimate, very close, very, you know, feel kind of much more handheld, less slick. The one thing that 1917 had off the bat was this nostalgia of war that everybody could relate to or understand. So the fact that the genre itself was World War, like, did a lot of the hard work just off the bat of our collective consciousness of what war is. And that was always missing with my, like, cannibal version, because it was so unrelatable and fantastical that I think it was a stretch for people to kind of just immediately be into, because they kind of had to get past the world to then enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
And what happened was that company that owned the script ended up kind of folding under. And I knew someone that worked there, and I said, can you get my script out there? And they went, yeah, I think so. And they managed to get it back for me. So managed to get it back.
Great.
To a different company. And they went, this is brilliant. Why has no one made this?
Yeah.
And I was like, I know.
Yeah.
And then they went, well, we want to make it, but we got one big no, which is we want to ground it more in reality. We it's too comic book. It's too fantastical. And we think it should be. And I said, okay, yeah, totally agree with you. And they thought it was just a very tiny rewrite. But I'm like, guys, like, this other script has got cannibals in it on page 15. Like, and then there's a whole, like, there's no way this is.
We need to workshop this.
Like, this is the one, this is a page one rewrite.
Yeah.
They go, oh, well, how long will that take? And me and the writer discussed it, and we came up with a plan for, like, how to do the rewrite. And my writer was very quick, a guy called Jamie Russell, and he did a great job. Whilst he was writing it, me and the producer put feelers out for an actual location, and then we found a location before Jamie had finished writing. So we took Jamie to the location, and then we were rewriting the script around the location.
Is there anyone other than Scott that would have gone along with such a crazy idea?
Do you know what I think? I think people would, because it's a challenge. And I do think actors like...
He loves a challenge, though, doesn't he? And you can tell even from his... Particularly over the last 4 or 5 years, the types of roles that he's agreed to do, it's a bit off the beaten track for him, isn't it? They are experimental in a way. And I do think Scott is someone who does like to put in the work, and he's up for a challenge.
Let's try and phrase it a different way, because I think there's hundreds of actors that would have loved to have done the Scott role.
Okay, yeah.
But Scott is the only person that could have done the role.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was written for Scott.
Yeah.
I don't know who you would get that would be able to do. It wouldn't be this movie that we've ended up with.
Yeah.
Maybe you could do it with Keanu Reeves. But what you need is, or maybe Donnie Yen. Because it's not just a kung fu-y movie. It's a fight movie, but it's a military movie, and it's guns as well. You know, really fighting-wise, you know, and I'm interested to see what the Scott fans are going to think, because it's not super fighty.
No.
There's a couple of big fights, for sure, which I hope they're going to land, but, like, it's action in a different way.
Yeah.
And to do fights like this in one camera, in single takes... you need quick fighters. You just need the level of fighter and athlete that one can do it very quickly, because otherwise it gets boring and it looks staged. And two, can land a punch on a cheek without actually connecting. And you just don't, those people are few and far between. And Scott is the king of that. So
yeah.
If we hadn't had Scott, it would be a different movie. You know, it would be a good movie, like, I'm sure, but it wouldn't have that.
Yeah. And you are making an action film. It's an impressive feat technically, but the action's still got to deliver, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know? Well, it's the crux of the whole thing. The action has to deliver, and the drama has to deliver.
Yeah.
Because you can't hide anywhere on it. You can't cut things to speed it up. You can't manipulate these things. You can't change a take. You can't change a performance.
Yeah.
So it was the ultimate challenge in that regard, of like having to deliver on the day. And in a weird way, it keeps everyone a lot sharper, because no one wants to fuck up.
Yeah.
So it's like you're actually putting this huge weight of responsibility on everyone, all departments. And in a weird way, I have to relinquish some trust, you know, and really hand over to the actors and everyone, and go like, guys, I can't fix this if you fuck up. Like, this is all you now. Like, we are going to film this shot. This scene's going to go on for 12 minutes. Da, 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 da. If one of you messes up your line, like, you're going to have to look at that person. You're going to have to look at all these people and apologize because you messed up your line.
Yeah.
It really
You've got Tim Mann on board in this movie, Lee Charles as well. I know you've worked with before. Jess is great in this. What a fantastic role for him as the villain. You work with these guys though, so I guess, you know, you have that shorthand with them. You sort of know what to expect working with them. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very fair to say. And I don't think Jess was like the new one to the fold on this.
Yeah.
Way. Like, you know, been making these sort of action movies and stuff in the UK now for 10 years as a director. But then before that, as an AD, kind of got to know people. And as you say, like Lee Charles, I think Lee Charles' first movie was Green Street 3.
Yeah.
We've stayed very loyal to Lee because, you know, he came down and volunteered to get kicked in the head. And it was like, okay, really want, fine. We can't cut away to sell a punch. So the punches have to nearly land. They have to nearly connect. And you need to trust each other to do that. And so Lee I knew was going to be fine with him and Scott, whereas Jess was a wild card in terms of, hadn't worked with Jess. Now I know his background is UFC and whatever, so you know he's a fighter at heart. You know
he's a scary looking guy as well.
He's an intense guy. He's a scary guy. And he's real deal. You know, he can take a punch if you know, he can give a punch if he wants. And that's not what we encourage. We're not trying to make people fight for real. But like, if you just took an actor straight out of drama school and said, right now, go and fight one of the greatest on-screen fighters in the world, they wouldn't know what to do. You know, whereas at least Jess comes from a world where he's been punched for a paycheck. So, but compliments to Jess, because Scott actually put forward Jess. I'm always about trying to find someone interesting and new that doesn't bring a lot of baggage to things, especially because we don't need that, because we've got Scott, we've got Ryan Felipe, we've got Ashley. But it's always difficult because sometimes with the fight guys, they're amazing at the fight stuff, but you don't always get the same level of drama. So the search was on, you know, do I find an actor who's going to bring me, you know, the Hans Gruber, or do I find, but not fighting, would I find a fighter who just has this amazing acting ability? And, you know, that was the hardest role to cast. We asked Jess to do a tape. Jess did a tape in the dialect of the character as it was written, but then his ID's at front and end, and when he was telling us a bit about himself, he was more in his sort of natural French. And I said, I love this guy, but I want him to do it in his natural, I want him to do it in the French, I don't want this hybrid of whatever. So we asked him to redo it again in more of a natural tongue, like a French Algerian, which he did. Well, this guy's incredible.
That must have been quite tricky, I would imagine, to move from intense action scenes to then bring the camera in for close-ups and really dramatic moments. I mean, it's quite demanding of the actors, but that must have been quite challenging, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%. I've always had a bit of an... And this is going to... I don't want it to sound arrogant, but I... There's like... Even if you watch Green Street 3, there's sort of like... That movie shouldn't really work.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's this really weird hybrid of all different movies in that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And we go from romance to fighting to like a league table to like training montages to and for some reason, maybe just because I knew it really well and I was so passionate about it, I was able to make the bridges that audiences could just watch it and enjoy it and be like, this is what it is. And I kind of think One Shot's the same. Like I didn't overthink getting from one scene to another, but I knew the material so well. And I knew what characters had to do in different moments to then be able to like get us to that next scene and it not feel too disjointed.
Yeah.
That it was, it's kind of, I suppose, just through age and experience and doing it quite a few times now to kind of go, oh, okay, well, I know how to get into that.
How long did you say you had to film this?
20 days.
Wow. Okay. So 20 days is not, it's not very long, that, is it? So what were the main challenges did you find, James, in doing a film like this in that time?
The weather is the worst.
Ah.
Because the continuity of the weather has to remain constant. You can't pop from clouds overcast into sun. And then the other problem you have with if there is sun is the sun is constantly moving, so the shadows are changing.
Of course.
You then make a very seamless cut. You might not know what happened, but something in your brain would go, that's weird, because the shadows would have gone from like one side of the face to the other and things like that.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you're making this kind of movie, you could not just turn up on the day, come up with the way you're going to do that shot, and then leave at the end of that day and not be worried, because you can't change anything. So you have to do this process where you kind of make the movie in like a really bare bones form before you make the movie, so that you know you're not going to, because there's this other kind of anecdote I've been telling people where, like, on a normal movie, when you shoot, like, you might get 40 setups in a day, you know, close up. Think closer to the gun, closer to the bullets, etc. And you might go home at the end of the day, go to bed and be like, oh, damn, like I forgot to get that over the shoulder with down the barrel.
Yeah.
On this, you'd go home at the end of the day and you'd be like, well, we could never shoot that again.
Yeah.
So you kind of have this, like, almost closure about it all, where you're like, I'm just always driving towards the next day because I'm not. I can't look back and correct anything because we just don't have the scheduled time or budget to reshoot.
Yeah. From an acting perspective, I guess this would have been quite unique for a lot of the actors. Probably never shot in this way either, I'm assuming.
Yeah, no one had. No one.
Yeah.
Even I. Not a lie. I hadn't.
Yeah.
They hadn't. Everyone was up for it. Everyone was up for the challenge.
Yeah, it was a good atmosphere on set then. I mean, everyone was really into it. Yeah, great.
Yeah, everyone was up for it because it was like being back at school again, because you have to relearn how to do every aspect of filmmaking again.
No, it was...
I remember Ryan Philippe came in on his first day and he was like, oh, I want you to do this. And he's like, I don't know, James, I've never done a one-shot movie before. Yeah. You know, and I look around at everyone and we're all like, none of us have.
Yeah.
What's difficult actually is the choice because you have to pick your take at the end of the day, because you have to know what you're going into the next day to be as seamless as possible, really. Yeah. You need to kind of, the most frustrating thing is, let's say you do get 20 takes of something. Now, the first 9 are probably shit because everyone's trying to do it in time.
Yeah.
But then around take 14, Scott might give his best performance. And then on take 15, Ashley might give her best performance.
Yeah.
And then on take 16, they don't give their best performance, but they give what is comparatively their best with each other performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But then at the beginning of Take 16, one of the actors at the beginning coughed when they
sneezes. Yeah,
you just have this like law of averages, you know. And there are some takes that got that didn't make the movie where Scott or Ashley might have done something absolutely incredible, but the law of averages across that 12-minute take meant, well, I've had to go with that one because that's the one where everyone is consistent. And those were the kind of difficult decisions that you'd have to just be confident in, like, no, you know what, the movie, this is, at this point in the movie, it's all about Ashley, so we're going with Ashley's best take. Or this part of the movie, it's all about Scott, so we're going with Scott's best take. And those were the difficulties.
You're a fan of it, James? I'm happy with how it turned out? Yeah,
I'm over the moon with it. It's the proudest achievement in film to date.
Yeah.
And not just because it was sort of like something that originated with me 6 years ago and has been like 6 year battle of back and forth. And it really has been like, you know, a battle with, there are people that have seen the whole 6 years and just been like, I can't believe you hang on, you know, because half of it is just crawling through the shit to like get to the Andy Dufresne, you know, like get to the other side. And so I'm really proud of myself for a few things, which is, you know, that. And then also I'm proud of what we achieved on the set with the wonderful cast and crew. Absolutely brought their A game. Everybody worked really, really super hard to deliver this. There was no sort of bad eggs. And I just really want it to find the audience it deserves, because I do think it's better than the sum of its parts. And I do think, like, you know, if the right people see it, it could really do well for not just me, but the entire crew and hopefully Scott as well, because Scott's having a bit of a day at the moment, you know, with regards to, was it Night Shift or Day Shift and John Wick.
Yeah.
And like, we all just want Scott to end up having his own Marvel or having something, you know, really big of his own and not straight to you know, DTV, as it were. And I really would love this movie to break through that. I'd really love for this movie to land and kind of put us over, if you know what I mean.
You're doing a shark movie at the moment, is that right? Or is that done? Is that done?
Well, randomly, I actually shot the shark movie before I shot One Shot. A year ago, this week, actually, I was shooting. That movie that you're talking about is called Jet Ski. It's a shark movie.
Jet Ski, yeah.
Shot in Malta a year ago, and it's been in VFX post, because it's heavily VFX shark, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's got 5 more weeks. We actually will have locked and wrapped everything sort of early December, and that I imagine will come out next summer, but I haven't heard any specifics on the release.
And the dream, I guess, James, is to still, you know, always be working in different genre, working in bigger budgets. Is that the dream then, is it?
I'd say so. Like, really, I like the genre. I think I probably sit quite well in the thriller action genre. That's kind of like where my taste defaults. I would love bigger budgets, bigger actors, bigger toys. You know, I really want to see these movies on the side of a bus.
Yeah.
You know, I really got into this because I wanted to make Jurassic Park or, you know, Collateral or Heat.
You know,
so those are kind of that's the ambition level of where I want to be. And hopefully it's just the steps, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
So no, pretty good right now, but I'm just so excited for the release.
It's getting good feedback from what I gather. I mean, you're hearing good things about it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you're one of the first people I've kind of spoke to that has seen from this kind of outlet point of view.
Yeah.
Wise. Yeah, it's interesting because on my previous movies, you know, you see people and they go, oh yeah, that's good. Good work. Like, and they like the movie, but no one reaches out to go, that was great. Whereas as soon as this was locked and finished, you know, a week, I was getting like calls from Hollywood that are like, this is really, really good. Like,
good.
It's it feels very different to me right now. This yeah. the response that it's getting, and I'm excited yeah. about it. And I just hope that the right audience finds it and it gets yeah. pushed in the right way, so that it can sort of do the what I career wise.
Best of luck with the release, James. I really enjoyed the movie, so yeah, best of luck, and I really look forward to whatever it is you're doing next. Okay, I'll let you go. You have a good day.
All right. You too. Have a nice day.
James Nunn there. Wonderful to catch up with James. Always a pleasure. Big fan of James and his work in the action realm. One Shot is a huge testament to his talents and his skills as a filmmaker, and we do wish him every success as he continues within the industry. Onwards and upwards, I'm sure. So thank you so much, James, for your time in talking to me. You can keep up to date with all the latest James Nunn news by following James on Twitter at Mr. James Nunn. He is also on Instagram under the same name, at Mr. James Nunn. Okay, it's Lee Charles time. Lee is an actor, a stunt performer, and a former six-time world kickboxing champion. He is based here in the UK, where he has most recently been working on The Expendables 4 with Sylvester Stallone, although we really can't talk about that too much. I think I'm on safe grounds. Lee has been messaging quite a bit on his social media channels about his involvement in that movie, so we do look forward to seeing Lee's involvement in that. Lee Charles is one of the actors in One Shot. He plays Jess Leodin's sort of main henchman, I would say, and he even gets to try out his French accent in the role, which is different from his usual Russian accent, which Lee says he's had to put on more than a few occasions in the movies. So listen, this was great fun chatting to Lee. I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly, but until then, let me throw over now to my conversation with the great Lee Charles. You're in the UK, because you're filming Expendables at the moment, is that right?
Oh, I can't say, really.
You can't say?
Yeah. But,
okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah. But, yes.
But, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, a few people have seen the post that's Stallone put up and stuff, but... Yeah. Other than that, I really can't really say much about it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I understand, you know, he's sworn to secrecy. But, yeah, Stallone, we should say, is taking some nice on-the-set videos. I saw one with you in the background, so yeah. That's pretty cool. And a selfie with Stallone as well. I mean, this must be a dream, Lee, to be working with Stallone. I mean, is he something of a hero of yours, would you say?
Do you know what? Growing up, I was born in the 70s and growing up in the 80s, and you know, I've got Stallone tattooed on me, so you know, which is
right. You
know,
do you actually?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. So I've got him tattooed on my arm. But he's, you know, he's always been a hero of mine. You know, I had Stallone, I had Arnie, I had Jackie Chan, and the first was Bruce Lee. So you know, growing up in the 80s. I think if you ever got a movie or you were ever wanting to watch an action movie, you know, they were the four guys that you predominantly just picked up. And then towards the late 80s, you know, Van Damme coming to play and stuff. Yeah. But I think during my whole childhood, you know, it was Rocky, it was Rambo, it was, you know, and so, yeah, you know, I was, you know, really taken back with the opportunity to be in his presence and to be there, and yeah, what an honour.
What an honour. Yeah, man, absolutely. It's amazing. Well, I'm really happy for you. I mean, you've worked with so many great fight choreographers, stunt coordinators, great actors as well. So where are you sort of at the moment, Lee? Things seem to be, you know, going from, you know, it's all going pretty well at the moment.
I mean, considering we've had all this COVID stuff and...
Yeah.
You know, especially the last 12 months, it seems to have just skyrocketed, you know, whether that's, you know, an add-on effect from being in Gangs of London or, you know, the previous work I've done before, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I've obviously signed NDAs and stuff. So, but I'm in some major, I've worked on some major productions this year. I go on to another one on Monday. It just doesn't sit. You know, I'm fortunate at the moment that the work's there and people seem to want me.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, it's sort of a boyhood dream. You know, obviously going from doing the martial arts and stuff, and you know, being an avid film fan for the whole of my life and stuff, to actually get to do what I do on screen and to work with people and, you know, and sort of leave my legacy behind even when I'm gone. Yeah. You know, long after I'm gone, these things are still going to be there. And, you know, yeah, people are still going to watch movies and, you know, and so it's something nice to leave behind for my legacy.
If you, yeah, like. When you meet a lot of these guys, do you ask for tips and advice?
I think predominantly I just sit and watch. I watch, yeah, how they work. You know, I find myself sort of like, I don't like sort of asking too many questions other than, you know, what they want from me and how they want me to, yeah, perform and stuff. But I have a tendency to just watch how a lot of different people work. And I see by watching their traits and, you know, some people have go into different mindsets before they get into character, before they go on screen. And I sort of see that and take it from them. And then, yeah, different energies, you know, I've worked a lot with Scott. I think this is our, I think this is our fifth movie.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So, you know, but the chemistry that me and Scott have got now, yeah, we can just do a fight team together because we know each other, we know how we work, we know each other's sort of, not limitations and stuff, but we just know how each other work, how each other perform. You know, I know how far I can push him, he knows that he can push me as far as he wants. So yeah, we sort of have that connection. And yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I remember the first time I worked with him, you know, and to me, I think Scott's the biggest sort of Western martial arts action superstar that there is. You know, he's, yeah, you know, I think, unfortunately for Scott, he's probably born in the wrong era. You know,
yeah,
sort of like, you know, if we still had that sort of VHS blockbuster era, even the DVD era, but when Blockbuster was out, I think he would be a far big, you know, he's a big superstar anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, he deserves them big things. He deserves everything. So it's just, I think it's just, but getting to work with him, I remember the first time I was working with him and I was like, wow, it's Scott Atkins, it's Boyka. So I was like, yeah, you know, this is like, you know, this is a big thing. And so having an opportunity to become friends with him, to,
yeah,
for him to want me to work on other movies with him and stuff, you know, that says a lot sort of to me.
Would you say you've developed a sort of shorthand, you know, if you make a connection, he doesn't mind that so much and he doesn't, that kind of thing?
You know, I think, you know, I'm always game for making it work. You know, I've always, yeah, been game for making it work. I remember the first time we worked together on Green Street and we were doing a hook kick, sort of semi-hook crescent kick to my head.
Yeah.
And he was trying to cheat it, and it just wouldn't cheat. You can't cheat it. It was filmed in slow motion. It's on a wide. The audience would see it. So I was just said, like, I just said, just kick me in the head. You know, but for me, it's sort of, coming from my fighting background, it's like, you know, that one moment like that, like, could save that fight. You know, it could make the audience go, wow, was that real? That looked a bit real. And I think I'm just that way inclined. I'm quite, yeah, quite sort of tough like that, and I'm built like that. Hopefully, when One Shot comes out, everyone will enjoy the fight.
Well, man, let's get into that, because okay, I was super impressed by this movie, Lee. I've seen it a couple of times now, and I keep trying to spot where the camera's cutting. I know it's, you know,
yeah,
it's so seamless. It's so well crafted. I'm guessing you've seen it, Lee. Are
no,
you happy?
Not yet.
Have you not seen it yet?
No, I see it. December, I get to see it. So
good grief. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So I feel quite privileged then to to have been sent this. Well, obviously, you know, you're in it. So you're, yeah, key. key role in the film, as well as Jesse's sort of main henchman. Is that, I suppose that's the fair way to put it. Just tell me about your involvement in this movie when James was saying, look, we want to do this as a sort of one continuous take played out in real time. Was that quite daunting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think because at first, when it was said to us, and I don't think you realise the extent of how long a take is going to be.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing. You know, you're quite lucky in the aspect that normally when you're on camera, you know, you'll do a couple of lines of dialogue and then it shuts off and everyone can relax in the background and stuff. Whereas on this, you know, some of the takes are like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like, you're having to constantly perform for 10 minutes, even when you think you're off camera,
yeah,
you sort of like can't let your guard down, because if you do, that just ruins the whole shot for everyone else.
You got to go again. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so for us, you know, I mean, for me, you know, it was exciting. It was new. It was also, you sort of like sat there going, like, because obviously when you do normal movies and stuff, you sort of know how long you're in it, you know, how much you're going to be seen, yep, how long you're appearing for. With this, you sort of like went, I'm not too sure, because you were filming, like, you were just doing one scene, you weren't doing as many scenes in the day.
Yeah.
And then you were like, but the, because it was so long, you were like, am I in it? I remember me and Jess sitting there, and it, you know, we were discussing how, you know, having to perform, having to do it, having to make sure that, you know, as one section's going and the other section sort of coming into play onto that same scene, how it has to interact, how it has to run. And as I said to you, you know, it takes, if you fluff your line, then you're right back. You know, you could have been filming for 5 minutes. If you fluff your line, it's right back to the beginning, you know.
Yeah. And particularly in remembering choreography, I'd imagine that must have been quite stressful as well, Lee. No matter how many times you run that routine with Scott, and you guys have a great punch up there, if one punch doesn't land right or a kick or something, you know, you've got to do the whole thing again, haven't you, really? There's no...
Yeah, energy as well, you know, because obviously, you know, when you do a normal fight, you'll throw a couple of techniques and then you're allowed to sort of like catch your breath, or, you know, they'll change it, they'll move it to a different size so they can't get it from a different direction. Whereas with this, it was just like, right, you're going to fight, and you had to know everything from start to finish. It was just like, right, on your mark. But you also had acting beats to do before that. So you had acting beats and dialogue. Then, you know, and then it was like, bam, 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 bam. And then after the fight's finished, you still have to continue with the acting beat there after that. So, it was unique. It was really fun because it was something completely different than what I've done for the last 14, 15 years since I started in this industry. And I like the challenge as well. I think the challenge to do it was really good as well, to make sure that, you know, hopefully the audience buy into it and it works.
And from Scott's point of view, I mean, I know because you're in it, but I mean, Scott's, you know, the camera's following him around for this whole movie, and what a challenge that must have been for him as well to sort of move between all of those different sequences. I mean, are you quite proud of his performance? I know you haven't seen the movie, so but you must have been quite proud of him, having worked with him for over a decade now. And
I think it was his most, you know, I remember when I got to set and he said, you know, this is going to be my most challenging role I've done. You know, because what the audience don't like, I think what a lot of people don't understand is, like, Scott does everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare. Like, he doesn't do everything. So, like, you know, and especially in this movie, like you just said, you know, there's no cutscene. There's no chance to bring a double in.
There's no,
you know,
hiding.
There isn't. You know, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And I hope the audience, like, sort of, you know, I think you do appreciate Scott. I think once they see this performance, see, you know, what the sort of the drive, the effort, the determination, you know, how much his energy is coming through onto the movie as well. Because, you know, we could all feel it. You know, we're on set, we feel it off him. We just bounce off him.
Yeah.
You know, and you sort of like, you look at your star of the movie, and if you, you know, the star of your movie is still pumping at 100%. You know, when we've done like 8-9 hours in the day, then it sort of makes the rest of you just go, right, okay, we yes. need to crack on here. You know, we've only been in a couple of scenes. He's there, you know. So yeah, I mean, you know, Scott is, you know, he's very unique, and I think this will make people appreciate him a little bit more as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You bastard! Come on then!
I want to go back a little bit as well, Lee, because I know, you know, I keep seeing you in action movies, and whether you're fighting Dave Bautista or Scott Adkins or whoever it is. But originally, you know, going back, you could have been a footballer. Is that right? I read that.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. Back in the day, yeah.
Back in the day.
When I was younger, I played for sort of Everton, Tranmere, Wrexham.
Yeah.
And then I had an injury, and a friend of mine, he's a friend now, he wasn't at the time, he was the manager of Wrexham. He sort of let me go because I had this injury. And then back then you didn't have physios, you didn't have the sports therapists that do the stuff that they do now. And I just got injured.
How old are you when you were injured then?
I was about 18, I think.
Oh gosh, right at the start.
So, but you know, do you know what? It was just one of the things, you know. I'd always done martial arts. I just had this ankle injury, and obviously it was just, I think it's unfortunate, but you sort of like 10 to a penny, if that makes sense. You know, so right, if you get injured, there's someone else that can sort of like come in and stand in for you, and you know, there'll be someone else there sort of chasing it. So yeah, but you know, I played at Wembley, I played at probably most of the grounds.
And growing up in the Wirral, does that make you, are you a red or a blue?
I'm a red.
You're
red,
a red.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But you play for Everton.
And do you know what? Yeah. It was the 80s and Liverpool were the team that everyone wanted to play for.
Yeah.
So I tried to use common sense and thought, they're the lesser team.
Yeah.
I'll probably get
those
hey,
fine. Yeah, yeah. Maybe head, edit that bit out.
but in my head, I was thinking, do you know what? Liverpool, everyone that I knew was playing for Liverpool. So,
yeah, okay.
And I just thought, you know, Everton are there. So I've got the opportunity to sort of play with them for a bit. Yeah. I tried to use common sense. I tried to use more of the thing in my head where, you know, who am I more likely to be able to get to play for? That's the way I used to see it. So, yeah. I've always been quite logical as to the way I think.
Yeah, yeah. But during that time growing up, you were into martial arts movies, and you were also into martial arts. You were training. Karate, I believe, was your first style, Lee. Is that right?
Yeah, I did Shotokan. Started Shotokan when I was six.
Yeah.
Did that for many, many years.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, as I say this all the time, but like, we went to my nan's. My nan and my granddad were the first people to get a VHS video recorder. So the whole family come round this one afternoon, and we'd been to the Jolly Roger video shop, and we picked two movies, and the movies were Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, classic.
The Big Boss, Bruce Lee. So,
okay. So it's quite a double bill.
Yeah, so I'm like five, and like Bruce Leon, and
and
I'd just become obsessed. The scene where he goes back after they've all been slaughtered and he falls over and there's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Apparently I was sick. It made me sick. The weird thing is, I remember watching Monty Python after it, you know, with the Black Knight with the arms.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, why wasn't I sick then if I was sick?
Yeah.
But that just, you know, it sort of like started this obsession with Bruce. And
yeah.
I remember thinking I remember my whole childhood just wanting to be Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to, you know, if there was a magazine out of, you know, anything to do with Bruce Lee, if there was like documentaries, if there was videos, you know, I had the Kung Fu suit. Everyone else is getting Mongoose BMXs as a kid and I'm getting Kung Fu suits with Kung Fu slippers and I'm rubbing nunchakers and
yeah.
I was just, you know, it was just, I just had this sort of, I had this childhood where I'd just become obsessed with this Asian master. And I think if it wasn't for that, I'm watching that movie and stuff and being as obsessed as I was, I probably wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah.
You know, that was, you know, that was a pinnacle time in my life, even though I didn't know it at the time, being so young. Yeah.
You were a world kickboxing champ, so I'm guessing you were pretty serious about your training as well. So just wonder where the movie side came into it, Lee.
There was a movie side, believe it or not, come into it in 2005. I went over to LA. One of my ex-girlfriends from my 30th birthday had planned this big trip for my birthday. I was going to LA, I went to Vegas and Seattle to see Bruce Lee's grave.
Yeah.
And then when I was in LA, the only thing I wanted to do was go to Benny the Jets gym.
Yeah.
So I wasn't bothered about anything else. You know, Benny the Jets being a hero of mine since I was a kid, since watching Meals on Wheels or Wheels on Meals. And I just, you know, Dragons Forever, you know, Force 5. I just become obsessed with this guy, watching him fight. My dad was a massive Benny the Jet fan from his fighting days. So for me, it was like, I want to go to the Jets gym and get a picture with the logo on the window and hold the bag and smile. And that was it. So I was sending emails, and it was the old emails that like used to have the dial and tone and stuff. And it took like about 4 years to get a reply.
Yeah.
But I was emailing back and forth to the gym. And I just said, you know, when I come over, is there any chance I can come and just do some sessions? So they were like really hospitable. They were like, no problem. First day I landed in LA, got to the hotel, phoned the gym, and I was like, listen, I've landed. Can I come down tomorrow and have a look around? And they were like, yeah, sure. So my girlfriend probably thought I was nuts. She did think I was nuts at the time.
Yeah.
And so the next morning, I went to the gym, didn't take any kit. I always take my kits everywhere I go. I always take a pair of gloves and my boxing gloves and my wraps and my gum shield everywhere I go. Yeah. But it doesn't matter where I go in the world, they come with me. But I left him at the hotel purposely because I didn't want to be that guy that walks into this place and goes, I've come to train, and, you know, I'm sort of thinking, God, you know, who's this guy?
Yeah.
So I got there, spoke to one of his instructors, a guy called Cody, and he said, it felt sort of like a little bit of a semi-interview, and then he goes, do you want to do some training? And I said, well, I haven't got my stuff. I said, I'll go home or I'll come back tomorrow. I'll go to the hotel or I'll come back tomorrow. And he goes, well, just go out back. He says, we've got a shop out back. Just go and get yourself some stuff from there. Come back in, we'll give you a pair of gloves and stuff, and you can just have a little move around. So being the excitable kid that I was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So we did it, and then I was in the, used to have this like little bag room, which was like it was built like a conservatory, but all the bags were hung up in there and stuff. And so I went in there and I was training, and then this lady knocked on the window. So I opened the window, and it was Sarah and his wife, Sensei Sarah.
Yeah.
And she introduced herself. Hi, I'm Benny's wife, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, thanks for coming over. And we just had a little chat. And again, I felt like another interview. You know, I felt like I was just getting sort of the feelers. And then about 5 minutes later, she comes and knocks on the window. And she's like, Sensei Benny's on his way back. He wants to meet you. You've come all this way to the dojo, to the gym. You know, he wants to come and meet you. So all of a sudden, I was like, geez. I was like,
yeah,
this is like Benny the Jet. So I went and got showered, and then I sat at the front, and he just come in, open arms, hugged me. We sat and spoke for about 2 hours. I just listened again, you know, just listen. in my head, I'm going, ask him about Jackie Chan, ask him about, you know, but I just sort of like listened to what you had to say. And then he said to Cody, he said to me, what are you doing watching LA? And I said, I'm just training. I'd arranged to sort of go up to Baz Rutland's place and a few other little gyms. And I said, obviously train here as much as I can, whatever I love. And then he shouted over to Cody and goes, he said to like write the address down for tomorrow. So Cody comes over with this address, and then Benny hands me it and goes, be here for 9 o'clock in the morning. So I was like, yeah, okay. Didn't ask. So we got outside. My girlfriend's like, where are you going tomorrow morning? I was like, don't know. She was like, why didn't you ask? And I was like, if Benny the Jet's asking me to be somewhere at 9 o'clock in the morning,
you're gonna be there.
I'm going. You know, it's. I'm not gonna go. What more is it? I was just like, I'm gonna go.
No, I'm sightseeing.
So the next day she comes with me. The next day, you know, he's like, bring your kit back. So I brought my kit bag and joggers and stuff on, and we got in the car, got the taxi, and we went to Santa Monica and Fairfax. And it was the Lee Strasberg. I was at the Lee Strasberg. Yeah. And then that was it. Benny introduced me into the world of stunts and acting, and I was there. I was training there with him for a while. We were doing like full days of like rehearsals and stunt work and fight choreography. And
wow!
And so the guy that I'd looked up to my whole life gave me a massive opportunity to work in film and to be there and. It was funny because when I was there, I remember when on the last day the phone went and Sensei said, Lee, it's for you. And I was like, who's phoning me? And Benny the Jet's gym. So I was like, who's this? And then I got on the phone, it was Shannon Lee, and she was saying,
wow.
She was like, I know you're going up to Seattle to see my dad and my brother. She was like, thanks for keeping the legacy alive. And I was just mind blown that this guy, I mean, I did other things in LA. We did training together. I did some stuff with him. I come home within the space of a couple of weeks. Before I left, he said, you're now my sort of ambassador for Europe and the UK. He said, and you're also part of my Benny the Jet stunt team. So I was like, all right. And I thought, well, that's nice. You know, it's nice for him to say that. And, yes. You know, it's a nice, nice gesture. And I didn't think nothing of it. And then I was back in the UK for about three, maybe 4 weeks. And then I got a phone call when we used to have house phones. I got a phone call on the house phone and my girlfriend answered and she's like, it's for you. I was like, who is it? She's like, it's Benny. I was like, Benny, you? I was like, I don't know you're called Benny. I was like, Benny, you? And then she sort of covered the phone and went, it's Benny. And I was like, geez, okay. So I got on the phone. He's like, hey, Lee. He's like, how are you? I was like, yeah. He's like, what are you doing for the next couple of months? And I was like, nothing, just work. He's like, can you get some time off? And I was like, yeah, what's up? He goes, we're filming down at Pinewood Studios. We're doing a film with John Cusack. I want you to come along and sort of help me train John for the movie and, you know, to keep him fit and stuff. And lo and behold, I quit my job because didn't give me the time off. But you just, when you present it with an opportunity like that, you just... If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Because you were a world champ by that point, so he must have known of you. Is that right, or did he not know you at all?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't really know. I just know that, like, in that time when that 2 hours when we were there, we just connected really well.
Yeah, yeah. He just saw something in you. What did he see in you, Lee? What do you think he saw? Just that determination, you know, that you
I don't know, because even now, you know, we still speak all the time. There's a documentary being made on him. I got a message, and he've asked me to be in the documentary that's getting being made about him.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I was like, really? And I'm like, yeah. I've seen a list of people who are on there. I know Shannon Lee was getting interviewed recently for it. And you just sort of like, you know, going back to this boy who is obsessed with Bruce Lee and wanting to be Bruce Lee and stuff. You know, obviously, I think, like, in my eyes, like, even now, like, reflecting, I think, too bad of ticking them boxes,
Well, exactly. You know. I've spoken to Benny for this podcast, and I think because I know him mostly from his film roles, in which he plays quite intense, intimidating characters on screen, that my assumption was that he would be, you know, quite an intense, intimidating guy in real life. But my gosh, that he couldn't be more opposite of his film roles, could he, Lee? He's very... He's quite spiritual, he's softly spoken, he's a very kind and considerate and clearly someone who, you know, when he sees talent, he's very supportive of people. Is that, that's your experience, you would say?
Do you know what? I've been blessed and lucky enough to train with him, you know, countless hours. But I think I have learned more from him, from sitting and listening to him.
Yeah.
You know, the knowledge that he possesses, his wisdom, his outlook on life. You know, he sort of gave me the courage and determination to push forward with what I need to do.
Yeah.
It was weird because every time I was having sort of like a down point in my life or I was feeling low, Sarah would get in touch with me and I was like, how does she know? You know, and you know, and they sort of like, you know, they let me become part of their sort of the family. You know, she used to refer to me as family all the time. She met my boy the other year, and you know, she was saying, "Oh, God, this is our godson." And you know, so for me, I'm like, you know, I'll say to anyone, you know, the thing with Benny Aquiles is that, like, for me, he was a master in the ring, but he sort of also mastered his life in terms of, you know, the output that he gives, you know, the quality of information that he gives to people that he meets. But Benny always has a saying. He says, to people that don't know me, they call me Benny. To people that really know me, they call me Sensei.
Yeah.
And that is true. That you know, there's like, because he is, you can be in his company for 30 minutes and you will walk away and you will think about that conversation for months on end because he's just that, and he just enlightens you with his knowledge and his wisdom.
And now we'll see how good you are.
Training actors and doing a bit of that. I know you've done a bit of stunt coordinating and fight choreography, that kind of thing as well. And I guess fight training. Are there some actors, I guess, are more into it than others? Have you noticed that at all over the years?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Do you know what? I think with me, like, I have this thing where, you know, I've got this amazing opportunity in life where I'm quite lucky and blessed enough to be working on in the movie industry, you know, both doing stunts and performing as an actor in front of the camera. I've trained various actors for various roles. My favourite was Olga Kurylenko. She was just, you know, she was brilliant when we did The Courier.
The Courier, yeah.
Yeah, she was fabulous. Olga just wants to train. she wants to do everything herself, and you sort of like, and when they're that committed to the role and want to perform and stuff, it makes your life easier. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, excuse me, I'm just, you know, like I was just saying, for me, every day I step on set, like, I'm like appreciative of the fact that I'm there. Yeah, you know, the fact that people want me to work for, and the fact that, you know, I'm able to bring my boyhood dream and perform it out and make it real, so that my little boy's six now, and he sort of understands that I'm in films and stuff, and to see it, you know, to see his face and stuff, and you just, you know, and you know, obviously, like, I've got a couple of big movies coming out next year, without saying what they are, the superhero movies. So
good one.
Yeah. So being there and having the opportunity to sit with my boy, sit in a cinema and go, there's your dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
because you can't show him Gangs of London just yet.
No.
Yeah. Final score, Dave Bautista. You have that wonderful fight scene in the lift. That's a great sequence. Was that fun to work on? Dave Bautista's such a beast, isn't he?
Yeah. Do you know? Yeah. You know, like, obviously, I'm a big fan of Dave. So I love wrestling. I think wrestling is brilliant. I've watched it since I was a kid. For me, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, Dave's Macho Man Randy Savage. So getting the opportunity to work with him was amazing. I remember when he turned up on set and seeing him. And obviously, when in his wrestling days, he had these like enormous traps. He had the biggest traps I've ever seen in my life.
Unreal.
It was just like...
Yeah.
And he turned up on set. Like, I remember, we were doing rehearsals and I was with his stunt double, Rob DeGroose, and I said to Rob, and Rob's a big guy. He's like really muscular, very vascular.
Yeah.
And I said to Rob, I was like, I put my arms around Rob and he's a big guy. And I was like, so how big's Dave in comparison to you? Because you're a big guy. And Rob's just like, yeah, he's big. And I was like, but you're a big guy. And he's like, yeah, he's big. And then I remember the first day Dave come down for rehearsals and stuff. And I seen him and I thought, and he's really lean compared to how he used to look.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, he's big. But then I was thinking, he's not as big as what I imagined him to be, because he'd leaned up and obviously he's not in his wrestling days anymore and stuff. Still a mountain of a guy. But I had this like conception in my head thinking, yeah, he's not as big as he is. And then we did the same thing with him and I couldn't even get my hands together. He's that wide.
Really?
I was meant to do this like sort of choke where I come round, and you can actually see it in the movie. And because my hands don't grab, I have to grab his jacket, like the breast of his jacket and sort of like pull that over. But I mean, what a guy, you know. Genuinely just an amazing, lovely guy.
And he's someone who really puts in the effort for the fight scenes. I mean, doing as much of the action that I guess he's allowed to do, I suppose. But
he's got a fantastic double in Rob DeGroose. Rob is amazing. He's a Dutch guy. But after fighting with me and Dave, the majority of it's Dave. He was in there. We're in that close, tighter space for it to work. There was no way of cheating things. Yeah, and you can see it's Dave.
Yeah, and he doesn't mind, I guess, from his resting days, if he takes a few knocks, he doesn't mind that so much. He's not not too precious.
We just went for it. I mean, I'm very mindful of what I do, and like my number one job is to make sure that the actor never gets hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
So and in that process, I don't mind taking a spank or two, regardless of what I'm on, in order to be able to do that. But you know, great for the choreography. We had the choreography nailed down. The energy was great. Performance was great. It was just really good. I remember, because obviously, you know, I have a little bit of dialogue, you know, at the beginning of it and stuff. And we hadn't rehearsed that at all. And we sort of, we turned up on a day and then we had a little walkthrough, and I just did it in my dodgy Scouse accent and stuff. And then I was playing this Russian guy, and obviously the guard, Andre. And then he come over, and then the first time we did a take and I did the Russian thing, the lift opens up and we go into the lift. So as soon as we go into the lift, Dave just burst out laughing. And when the door shut, and I was like, shit. I was like, oh, my voice is not. And I was like, is everything okay? And he went, I really didn't know what, you completely threw me off. And I was like, oh, wow. And he goes, honestly, he goes, I remember looking at you going, where's this voice come from?
Yeah.
He was like, he goes, you just hit it on the head. So every time we were doing that scene, it was just good. And he made me feel, it made me feel dead comfortable with obviously before, you know, I'm getting to perform in front of Drax, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, it's you know, massive WWE star, and I don't care what anyone says, you know, having to sort of put this Russian accent on and to do the lines and share that moment with him. I was nervous, and that moment going into the lift, and we were sharing that little bit of a laugh between us, you know, it just totally relaxed me, and it made it easier to be able to perform.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And do you mind doing more of the acting and saying lines and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you love it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I think at first I just wanted to be on to fight and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think as you sort of grow in the industry, I like performing. You know, I'm dead quiet at home. I'm dead antisocial. Don't really go out. Don't really do anything. You know, sit in and watch movies, read books, or collect comics. I'm dead easy. All I do is train all the time. That's basically my life. Yeah. I'm a little boy, obviously, my son. I like being able to have that moment where you're sort of like take yourself out of your own life and go into this other world. Yeah. And I sort of, I like being able to do that. I like being able to perform. I like being able to be given the opportunity to do that, you know. And obviously, I think one shot's the one where I'm doing more than I've ever done, like in terms of the acting side. You know, there's quite a little bit of dialogue.
Absolutely.
Russian
and with an accent, guy. French accent.
Russian bad guy that speaks French. And I'd never spoke French in my life before that movie.
Really? Yeah.
But I was lucky because obviously Jess speaks French.
Of course.
So
yeah.
It made life easier. And I think obviously, you know, I've played Russian. Oh God, I can't even remember how many times now I've played Eastern European how many times that accent I can just go into. And I think it made it easier being able to do that accent and then speak French, because then with French doesn't have to be really spot on. So, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so...
Yeah.
I'll
wait. Oh, it's good, Lee. No, don't Thank worry. You. It's good. Yeah.
Damn your ass. What are we to do with you?
Gangs of London, which blew my mind when I saw it as a British TV show, the levels of action that, you know, Gareth and Matt, I know it's, you know, his sort of team there, Jude as well, what everyone created on that show, I think was phenomenal. You're in Gangs of London, you have such an iconic, great, you know, pretty grisly fight scene with Showpace. So just working on that show, again, that's more of it's a stunt role, but it's acting as well, isn't it? You know, that you were on board as an actor.
I think obviously because that fight, there's a lot of drama involved in that fight.
There's a lot
of drama beats, and there's a lot of things where you have to keep that intensity. You have to make the audience feel like, you know, that obviously Elliot's in trouble. I mean, again, for me, working with Gareth, you know, growing, as I said before, growing up with my dad, we used to watch the films together, and we hadn't watched the movie together for years. And I remember when The Raid came out and I bought it on DVD. And my mum had gone shopping, and I said to my dad, I said, listen, I've got this film, do you want to watch it? And that was the first film we watched together for years since I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So then getting the opportunity.
Gosh, did he like it?
Yeah, he loved it. He was like, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
So just ultra violent, and it was non-stop. And so when the opportunity to come up to work with Gareth and have the audition and stuff through Jude and stuff, it was, you know, it was one that I tried to grab, you know, with both hands. And I remember going for the audition. I was really lean at the time. I was in good shape and stuff. And I did the audition, and Gareth asked me would I be able to put weight on to like sort of look sort not athletic, but just look monstrous, you know, and sort of look gorilla like, if you like, you know, with big shoulders and big chest and belly and. So I was like, yeah, I'll be able to do that. I was a bit gutted because I trained so hard to get lean.
Really?
But
wow.
Then I was like, you know, it was just, it was put 2 stone on for the role.
Wow. How do you do that? You know, when they say actors put on weight for a role, you just as simple as you just eat a lot. It's got to be more controlled surely.
Yeah, obviously, I change the way I train, because a lot of my training involves like cardio-based stuff with my fighting and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was doing a lot more weights. It took my cardio training down. I wasn't hitting the bags as much. I was doing enough cardio that I thought was necessary to be able to perform the fight scene without sort of being unfit.
Yes.
And then I just changed my diet in terms of I ate more sort of carbohydrates, so more pasta and stuff like this, and stuff that will bloat you, and stuff that holds water. And it worked. So I felt really uncomfortable when we were filming because I wasn't used to having that weight on me. But it was that experience on that show and that fight. I remember when me and Shoppe were filming it, and it felt special. You know, I've said it before. Like when you're doing something, there's sometimes that you just have this feeling where you think, this is special. You know, there's something about this that is like different than everything else.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it was a tough shoot. I think we filmed for, I think we did 5 days continuous.
On the fight scene.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. Okay.
And I was just angry for 5 days.
Yeah.
So,
and you're just in your pants there as well. I imagine. Good grief. So, Gareth's got a way of filming, hasn't he? He's a fan of doing lots of takes. Is that right, Lee?
Gareth knows what he wants, and Matt, him and Matt have this chemistry where they both know that their vision matches each other.
Yeah.
So they understand how each other is going to get the best from each other. When we were on that shoot, you know, it was they knew exactly what it was, so they didn't. They didn't waste like time shooting stuff that they knew they weren't going to use. Does that make sense?
It does.
So you know, you'll be on some things and they'll just shoot a wide just for the sake of shooting a wide, and you're just like, why are you shooting a wide? You don't need to shoot a wide. You know, it's like, yeah, but it's just safety. And it's like, they know exactly what they want, that they don't need that safety.
Are you ever on film sets and you think, gosh, we're wasting time here, or, you know, it'd be much quicker if we maybe set this up like this? Do you notice that on sets, or you're like, God, this?
I think everybody does. Sometimes what the director wants and what the sort of the stunt coordinators put in, they don't necessarily tie together. You know, this is what I was saying in relation to sort of Matt and Gareth and stuff. You know, one person will have one vision, another person will have another vision, and then you just shooting stuff for the sake of shooting stuff sometimes. Yeah. And it unfortunately doesn't come out. You do, but you just got to sort of bite your lip and sort of, you know, get on with it. If I'm in a position where I'm on set where I'm allowed to put input in, which sometimes you do, you know, sometimes you're allowed that, then I will, you know, I'll voice my opinion and I'll say, you know, I'll try and give, you know, sort of my interpretation of what I think, and to be honest, a lot of people are up for that. I mean, especially, you know, on your low budget stuff, you know, because you know, I think on your low budget stuff, you know, we're sort of like, we're all in that same process, you know, and everybody's wanting to make it successful. Everybody's wanting to make you know the movie as good as they can, because you're in such a market that is so competitive, and there's that much getting made. So yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It's really, really difficult. It is, you know, because you know, you've sort of got to bite your lip at times. That's all.
Yeah.
Ha! Chu Ching Kuang, the king treated you well. Why do you betray him? What do you want?
Lee, just before we wrap this up, I just wondered if you had any tips or anything for someone who maybe is looking to pursue a similar line of work, getting into the movies, action movies, the stunt world. What are the main sort of tips you think that, you know, you wish you knew when you were getting into the industry?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? You've just got to work hard.
Yeah.
Honestly, you can't cheat working hard. You've got to be really thick-skinned with this industry. You've got to be massively thick-skinned. You know, I wouldn't give anyone advice in relation to, you know, sort of how to get into it, because it is what it is. But what I would say is that once you start a career in this industry, no matter how many doors get shut on you, just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, people will continuously shut doors on you. I still get them shut doors on me all the time. Yeah. You know, it's a competitive industry. You know, I'm quite fortunate to be able to be starring in movies like One Shot now and getting to work on the stuff that I do. But I've always had this attitude. Even when I fought, when I got beat, I saw it one step closer to winning. So I took that attitude from when I used to fight into film. And for every time that someone said no, or the worst thing is not hearing back, because you don't hear back from auditions.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought, do you know what? It's one step closer to someone saying yeah. And there's going to be someone that does say yeah. There's going to be someone that gives you that opportunity. You can't continuously knock on doors and everyone say no. There's going to be one person that opens that door and says yeah. And, you know, whether it's you're the guy walking down the road, or whether it's, you know, you're the guy behind the counter serving something, whether you get dialogue, whether you want to do that action stuff and you get to take a punch off an actor, or you know, you get to follow. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's like, and also treat nothing as beneath you. Do you know, yeah. like when you're starting off in this industry, get as much experience as you can. Mm-hmm. You know, because experience is everything. Even a bad experience is a good experience because you'll know never to not to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, we're, you know, and this is the thing. I mean, the stuff that I did at the start of my career, and you know, that like, I'm grateful for doing. You know, but they weren't very good. You know,
yeah.
But, you know, yeah. but I'm grateful for doing it because it teaches you the right from the wrong. Yeah. And you know, and it's a long journey. You know, it's a long journey. You know, it can be difficult at times. It can be hard. It will test everything that you have about you. So just be thick-skinned and just say, you know, I'm not giving up on this. I'm not giving up on this opportunity. I never, you know, I've sacrificed many things for this, you know, and you know, I'm in a position now where I can enjoy what I'm doing. You know, I'm grateful for what I'm doing. I enjoy it. And I can share all these experiences with my boy now.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, just don't give up, man. You know, that's all I can say to everyone. Just honestly, I know it's like, you know, it's dead cliche and everything else, but stop being programmed and don't let anyone tell you can't do anything. That's the worst. That's the biggest stress that I would say to anyone. I teach when I still teach martial arts now, and I teach this like. Teach what I say to them. The only person in life that can ever stop you from achieving anything is you. It's not no one else. It's got nothing to do with no one else. The only person that can ever stop you achieving, if you really want something, the only person that can ever stop you from doing it is you and giving up on you. If you don't do that, you will get to what you want to do. You just need to persevere. You just need to drive and you just need to push forward. So, yeah.
That's amazing advice, Lee. We'll leave it there. Thank you
very much.
So much for your time.
And if all the listeners, go out and watch One Shot when it comes out. You know, we really appreciate the support. You know, a lot of time and effort in. You know, this was James Nunn's sort of baby. It was his dream many, many years ago. So to be a part of it, you know, James and Ben Jakes have been really good to me. They've helped me with my career, and it seems that every time I'm like the Al Long of the British world. So
very good comparison. I like that. I might steal that.
Tim Mann actually called me that. He sent me a message and said, "You are the Al Long of British cinema." And I was like, "I will be the Al Long all day." But go out, check out the movie. Big thanks to Ben and to Joe and to James. And of course to Mr. Atkins for having me on and having me involved.
Thank you so much. That's great. Listen, you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye now.
Lee Charles there. What a pleasure that was to chat to Lee. The Al Leong of British cinema. I do love that. All credit to Tim Mann for coming up with that. It's spot on. Lee has loads of films coming up, and we are very excited to find out what those superhero movies are, of course, that he mentioned. So, and of course, Expendables 4 that he's working on, and that's shaping up very nicely by the looks of things. It's got Stallone, Statham, Couture and Dolph Lundgren are all back within that franchise, and they're being joined by Iko Uwais and Tony Jaa in the Expendables 4, so it's a triple threat reunion. We're super excited about that movie and how that turns out. You can, of course, watch Lee in action in the movie One Shot. It stars Scott Adkins and it is released in cinemas and on demand in the USA this Friday, the 5th of November, courtesy of Screen Media Film. Keep up to date with all the latest Lee Charles news by following Lee on Twitter at Lee A. Charles. He is also on Instagram at Mr. Lee A. Charles. And Lee is also on Facebook at Lee Charles Actor. That is just about it for today. A huge thank you to James Nunn and Lee Charles for taking the time to talk to me, and a huge thank you also to Emma Biedler at Falco Inc. for all of her help in supporting this episode. And of course, a huge thank you to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened to this episode all the way to the very end. Thank you so much. Your support is very much appreciated. So traditionally, this podcast comes out every 2 weeks, although it looks like the next one may be along even sooner than that. It's all because of tying into release dates and all of that sort of stuff. So look, it looks like at this stage you'll be getting another new episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast in a week's time rather than 2 weeks' time. So there you go. This podcast is a little bit like buses. You wait ages for a bus to arrive and then two come along at once. So look, the best way to stay up to date with any new episodes is, of course, to subscribe to the show. You can also check out the latest information via our social media channels. Head over to kungfumovieguide.com for all of our contact details, plus ways to donate to the podcast and the website. And you can also sign up to our newsletter. And don't forget, you can always contact me on email. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. So that's it for today. Until next time, have a good week. Stay safe, stay well, and go and watch One Shot when it is released on Friday. And I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.